This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You and I have unfinished business.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Get away from her, you...
Ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
At the movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Wapagan Ampke Pagan. Joining me today, Ian McNally and Bahe Yusuf.
It's just after seven, and you're listening to Not the BBC.
Coming to you live over the wireless to review Darkest Hour, not The Darkest Hour. There is no definite article. The Darkest Hour is a horrible alien invasion movie starring Emil Hirsch.
Where the aliens are invisible, right?
And huh? It's set in Russia.
Yes.
What? Something like that.
I think the text font is also like in Russian Cyrillic, but it's
what?
From 2011.
I'm not going to look this up.
No, you don't have to, because even if you do, now it's been forever relegated to like page three of Google searches. So
that's true.
You'll never find it. Even if you search The Darkest Hour, which is what I thought this movie was called for the longest time, you now just get a picture of Gary Oldman on Google, which is great.
And that's a picture you want to see, really.
It is. Yeah. This is a film directed by Joe Wright, of course, responsible for the wonderful Atonement, which had one of the greatest Dunkirk scenes outside of Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk. He was also responsible for Hannah and Pride and Prejudice. And this is the kind of movie in which the trailer should have that booming voice going, Gary Oldman is Winston Churchill.
It just screams prestige biopic all over it.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, it's the kind of movie, I mean, when you look at the structure of the film, it's the kind of movie that could have been a TV film, that could have been a TV movie if it didn't have Gary Oldman.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
But under all of that prosthetics and makeup and I don't know if he was wearing a fat suit, but...
Or has he just gotten old?
Maybe. But he still shines.
Yeah.
This is 2 hours that is carried on his shoulders single-handedly.
Can I say this is his best performance to date?
It's a high bar
that
to
is a
cross.
High, I mean, yeah. Even you he forget, was you Mozart. He was. Yeah. He's been everything.
Yeah, like we've forgotten performances of his that are just amazing.
But this is a really, really amazing performance, right? Yeah. Because, like you said, Umar, this movie is essentially Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill for 2 hours. You know, and it's a great film. It's a great watch. My only thing is that I'm wondering if had I known more about Winston Churchill, if I'd have enjoyed it more. I'm just wondering because I know of a few. I know the big picture. I know what he did. I know the speeches and all that. But
he wore a hat, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he smoked cigars. I'm wondering if I had known more about him as the person, would I have liked this more? Would I have liked to have seen that interpretation, that version of him on screen?
Like, well, for me, I mean, I enjoy the movie as it is, and I'm coming off it hot on the heels of I'm in the middle of watching The Crown season 2,
right?
And for me, it worked as a perfect companion piece to this, to The Crown and Dunkirk, because I got so enamored with the John Lithgow version in The Crown.
Yeah. Great version.
That seeing this is like it's jarring at first, and I'm like, I love John Lithgow. I'm not going to like this at all. And then it just wins you over because you're like, no, it's the younger version. It's fine. It's Chris Pine to William Shatner. I can do this. It's fine.
Right.
Very different kind of Chris Pine.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
But the other thing the only thing that took me slightly out of the movie, I think, not knowing that, I didn't know much about this period of time either. Or at least I had maybe heard some of the speeches in The World at War, that documentary series.
Yeah.
But what was going on around them and what kind of person he was.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about, and I think that's very interesting. Although I'm sure some artistic license has been taken.
I'm sure there has been, and also, I mean, this is a very focused movie. It is not a cradle to grave biopic. It is just 20 days in the life of Winston Churchill when he ascended to the prime ministership purely by chance, by accident, because Viscount Halifax did not want the job.
Yeah.
If not, they would have given it to him. The king would have been ready and willing to hand him the job. But it was a time of war. And nobody knew what to do. And in many ways,
Everyone hated Churchill as well.
Hated Churchill.
Give it to him.
Yeah. No, but that's
why, right?
It can't
get any worse.
They knew that it's too difficult. Someone would screw up.
Yeah.
So you might as well make him the scapegoat.
It's a losing job, right?
It's like, a losing
job. No matter what happens on the other end.
The classic poison chalice.
The classic poison chalice, yeah.
And in these 20 days, he's got to figure out. Because I think it's showing him figuring out how to deal with the Nazi menace. I mean, he's the reason, another reason why they liked him is he's the only one who has been saying, this Hitler guy's not great.
Correct. Mm. Even as a backbencher, he was the only one to raise that objection, if you will, like, hey, wait a minute, I think this guy's going to be a mass murderer, right? Yeah. But the movie does well to kind of point out all of his flaws as well. Very early on, there is what is seemingly a throwaway line between the king and Chamberlain about all of his flaws, all of his mistakes in India, in Gallipoli, in Norway, and the fact that he got one thing right with regards to Hitler maybe shouldn't be something to celebrate.
Yeah.
But what did he say? A broken clock is right twice a day.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Or twice a century. but I do like it's him coming, like you see him slowly coming around to like thinking about, I never knew anything, whether this is true or not, the whole thing about maybe seeking peace around the time of Dunkirk. Because we know from Dunkirk, if they hadn't had Mist, they wouldn't have been able to get Dunkirk off and the British army would have been eliminated. Mm.
All of them.
Yeah. And it's him coming to the terms with what he needs to do and also showing the cost of that. Like there's a thread going through it of the troops that are being sacrificed straight away. And this was a time, again, between the two world wars, or leading up to the First World War, was a time when countries were able to make war willy-nilly and not really, you know, there was a lot of wars and treaties done without an awful lot of loss of life. And this was, again, after World War One, people had a bit of time to think over things and we can actually get away with it again. It's like, no, it brings home that cost very, very, very soon.
The whole thing with what he did, trying to deflect attention from the Nazi army away from Dunkirk was quite interesting for me, because whether or not it's a flaw of Winston Churchill as the person, as the general, or if it's just maybe the writing, it just felt like it didn't sort of hit him that he was sort of literally throwing a bunch of lives out into the fire just to be taken away.
But I think that's his character. I think, and that's why at certain points I would be like, ugh, they have to introduce a young character to get the viewpoint for the youth or for the youth. But there is a beautiful moment where she's typing up a telegram and she breaks down.
That
moment really worked for me. I mean, we talk about Gary Oldman's performance, but there are as well an awful lot of very nice directorial flourishes in this. There's a repeated motif of people looking up
into the sky, which is beautiful.
And there's one where it does an insane wipe to a face lying dead in the dirt, and it's like, what is this? This is like from a different movie completely.
That was a great shot. Yeah.
No, it's interesting you brought that up, Bahir, because I felt that was kind of justified in the characterization of Churchill, because there's one scene where he goes, yes, I'm sacrificing 4,000 to save 300,000. And then later when Halifax...
I mean, you do it in Age of Empires or in a video game anytime. It's the fact that when they're real people they're sending you letters.
Yeah.
But later when Halifax brings up the disaster at Gallipoli, you know, there is still no remorse in Churchill, because he's just like, well, if the generals had got it right and hadn't screwed up our element of surprise, we would have won because it was a great strategy. Mm. And I think that kind of reinforces him as the kind of person that I will do what needs to be done, the ends justify the means.
Yeah. Mm.
It's not even what needs to be done, it's what I think needs to be done.
Exactly.
And damn the rest of you. Damn you, Stannis Baratheon.
Well. So
we should say that Lord Halifax is played by the actor who played Stannis Baratheon in Game of Thrones.
But also, there is another comparison to be made. I mean, I guess a lot of people have been making that comparison with Dunkirk, or at least saying that it would be a great double bill.
There's no Germans in this either.
No Germans. No, we don't see a single Nazi. Germans. But there's another comparison to be made. And watching this film, I think Joe Wright's stylistic choices as well reminded me of Spielberg's Lincoln. And this movie played out in a very similar fashion. I don't know if Joe Wright took inspiration from Daniel Day-Lewis and Steven Spielberg, but the idea of focusing on a very particular moment in Lincoln's life, having all of these things happen in darkened rooms, having Churchill and Lincoln orate their way out of things.
Yes.
There is a great line at the end.
Don't spoil it, because it kind of sums up the whole movie in a beautiful bow. It's two lines.
I won't spoil it, but there are two lines at the very end of the film that are absolutely perfect. And it's the kind of thing you just wish you'd written and had my hair standing on end, and sums up everything that Churchill is.
Yeah.
It feels like Churchill is the spiritual successor to Lincoln with regards to how biopics are told. And I think that's possibly the reason why I loved it. Not to say that it isn't a very flawed movie. It had some bits that were kind of hammy and kind of cheesy.
Mm. It's kind of long as well, isn't it?
It's about 2 hours and 5 minutes.
Yeah, because it was like, by the end, I was like, wait, are we going to watch the whole war?
Yeah.
Because it didn't seem to be coming to a point where it was going to tie itself off.
Yes, true.
But all of it worked because of those stylistic choices. I mean, the chamber in Parliament is absolutely beautifully lit.
Yes. Yeah. There's like it's a single amazing. Window and a shaft of yes. light shining down. Even and the, smoke everywhere.
The first time Winston Churchill went to go see the king, that was a beautiful shot as well. Just,
just going through the doors?
Yeah, walking through the doors. That was great. Like a lot yes. of these shots
the king
were
standing
beautiful.
In the distance.
Yeah, in the distance, but with like a...
The reveal of Winston Churchill in bed having his breakfast and whiskey.
Yeah, that was great. His face is revealed by a light of a match.
A flash of a light
and
of a match.
And then someone opens
yeah.
the curtains.
Correct.
And then he goes looking for the cat under the bed. It's got this nicely humanizing element to it yes. that he is this monster. Of the he was naval commander or something like that. He was the head of the Navy at some point as well. Like he's this titan of history, but also you know he can't remember where he put his matches, and that bloody cat is under the bed again.
Yeah,
it does work really really well with The Crown because you see actors like Pip Torrens who plays Tommy in The Crown popping up in the background. Another Stephen Dillon Stannis Baratheon, he's in The Crown as well as the painter. But it's really weird. Kristen Stock Thomas looks almost like. She's going to turn into, is it Harriet Walter who plays Winston Churchill's wife in The Crown? Like, they look yes. like they're just separated by 10, 15 years. It's really weird. They're the same haircut and everything.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I mean, we've spoken a lot about Gary Oldman, but the supporting cast are wonderful, right? Yes. Lily James is really good. Kristen Scott Thomas is the perfect Clemmy.
Yeah.
Like, there are moments when she's just looking into the mirror and she goes, this is the face of a woman who is tired.
Yes.
And it's so good.
I particularly like the relationship with the two, between yes. the two of them, right? Yeah. Because Winston Churchill comes off as this giant,
pig.
Well,
that's what she calls him, right? Her pet nickname for him is Pig.
Yeah.
Not Piggy, not Mr. Piggy, just like, all right, Pig.
It's a term of endearment.
Yes.
No, but...
But he's terrified of her.
He is terrified of her. But also, he's this titan, right? He's
literally.
Yeah, he's throwing things in war rooms. He's, you know, people are either shaking with hatred of him or
even the
with
king
fear
is afraid of him.
Even the king is afraid of him. But then when Clammy walks in, he just melts. Yeah. That sweet scenes they had in the bedroom where they're just talking to each other and she's really sweetly talking to him like, you know, calm down.
You'll be fine.
It humanizes them nicely.
Yeah, and that was beautiful.
And we should say the king, Ben Mendelsohn, is great because it's hard to get, again, Jared Harris out of my head.
Yeah.
And he managed to do it pretty soon. Pretty quickly.
Sure.
No, this is a fantastic film. I strongly urge you to go check it out. Darkest Hour is now in cinemas. Of course, I think he might be a shoe-in for that Oscar. I haven't seen...
Actors love prosthetics.
They do, right? They do.
Yeah.
And also the Academy loves this.
Yeah.
They do. And just going by that old adage, Gary Oldman deserves it for everything. So it's about freaking time, really.
Yeah. I mean, this does feel like a natural sort of Oscar-baiting film, right? You know, I mean, not in a bad way, not in a manipulative way, but this is an Oscar film. This is an Oscar film, I think.
Unless Daniel Kaluuya upsets everything with Best Actor for Get Out.
I don't know about that. I love that movie, but this is something else. This performance is something else altogether. Because just a very quick note, the other thing I liked about it, as a kid, I used to be obsessed with World War II stuff. And I spent a lot of time watching Winston Churchill because my dad's a big fan of his writing. And Gary Oldman doesn't actually imitate Winston Churchill. He does a take on him, which is quite smart because it's not complete imitation. He has a little bit of that voice, but it really is his own take.
Oh, no, but it's... I think,
and so it feels natural, right?
Yeah, yes. And I think if you tried to be Churchill, I think people would see that straight away, and it will just sort of throw you off the film every time because then you're thinking of it's Gary Oldman doing an impression of Churchill, whereas in this case it's his version, so it comes off very naturally.
It's his version, but he completely melts away into the
character. Oh no, absolutely, completely.
Darkest Hour now in cinemas. Check it out and let us know what you think. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
I'm at Bahi Wai.
You're listening to At the Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.